discovery so that we can have real government-to-government dialogue. The Constitution guarantees, it says that the treaties of this land are the supreme law of this land. And we have hundreds of treaties with Native nations, and yet these Native nations were considered to be domestic dependents. I tell people, tribal sovereignty is in some ways a sham. We're sovereign over our lands like your teenage child is sovereign over their bedroom. Yes, you can put a sign on the door and you can lock it if you want, but it's ultimately in your parents' house. We need to change the basis of the dialogue. We need to change the relationship in order to have a true government-to-government dialogue and relationship. And then we can talk about consent. Then we can talk about what does it mean for this other government and these other entities to come into these lands, which are under the jurisdiction of the tribes and are considered sacred to them, and not there for exploitation and profit, but there for sustainability and for life. You know, then we can have a real dialogue about what does it mean to work together to try and figure out can we use the resources? Can we transport the resources over these lands, or what do we need to do about that? But first, we have to change the foundation of the relationship.
I wanted to go to New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland, who introduced Senator Elizabeth Warren at the Native American Presidential Forum. Haaland is one of the first two Native American women in Congress.
Some media folks have asked me whether the president's criticisms of her regarding her ancestral background will hamper her ability to convey a clear campaign message. I say that every time they ask about Elizabeth's family, instead of the issues of vital importance to Indian country, they feed the president's racism. Elizabeth knows she will be attacked, but she's here to be an unwavering partner in our struggle, because that is what a leader does.
Ahead of the Native American Forum, Senator Warren unveiled her Honoring and Empowering Tribal Nations and Indigenous Peoples plan. The plan includes expanding affordable housing and locally administered health care in Indigenous communities, expanding broadband access, strengthening voting rights, restoring tribal jurisdiction over crimes committed on Native land, and a pledge to revoke the Keystone XL and Dakota Access Pipeline permits. Christine Nobis, we're going to end with you. If you can talk about the significance of Senator Warren's presence, her apology, and her plan.
I am impressed with Warren's policy. It came after Castro's policy. And I was really hoping that Castro would incite more of these candidates to get on the ball in this capacity. I'm not necessarily impressed with her apology. I'm very happy she apologized. However, what was missing was the reason she needed to apologize for. It's not okay at this level to just say sorry. There needs to be an understanding that she did something that took away opportunities from other Indigenous people. And I do hope that she does continue to speak on this topic, because it will bring up many issues that haven't been spoken about, such as tokenization and
Christine,
the misuse
we're gonna
of
have
Native
to leave
American
it there,
heritage
but
lineage.
I thank you so much for being with us. Christine Nobis of Ceding Sovereignty, Mark Trahant of Indian Country Today, and independent presidential candidate Mark Charles. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:03. Linda Olson Osterlund is up next. She's hosting Voices from the Edge, and she will open the phone lines to hear your voice on issues you want to discuss. That phone number, 503-231-8187. Voices from the Edge, next.
Cable Comedia Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stephen Marley, Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater in Portland. The second son of Bob and Rita Marley, eight-time Grammy-winning musician and producer Stephen Marley, will perform in Portland with DJ Sasha Pena, who will be opening the show. Again, that's Stephen Marley, Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater, 8 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBLO Community Radio. This is Linda Olson Osterlund. I'm hosting Voices from the Edge today as a guest host. I've wanted to do this for a little bit. I think it helps all of us in the larger KBU community to get to just talk about the issues we think are important, talk about the news stories that have really struck us. And so we're opening the phone lines today. You are the only guests. That's you guys out in the listening audience. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And all I ask is you don't cuss at all, because the FCC hates that, and that you try to have a clear point and make it. And, you know, we'll hope to get everybody who wants to call and get on the air on the air. As you know, so that will be it. So I invite you to do that. I started looking at some of the news stories that have been striking me, and frankly, there's so much so often, it's really hard sometimes to focus in on particular ones. One of the ones that I was most concerned about is, of course, the environment and what's been going on in the environment is the continued race towards global, you know, towards global catastrophe, really. So I'll mention a couple stories that relate to that. One is the Amazon fires. If you listen to Democracy Now! Or other news agencies that really cover this stuff, you've heard that there's an amazing amount of fires in Amazon, and the Amazon, you know, has often been called the lungs of the planet, but also it's the very most biodiverse area in the on the planet, and the source of many medical remedies that have come out of there, and we haven't even begun really to count the species in the Amazon. Right now, there have been between 74,000 fires. I mean, between January and July of this year, there have been over 74,000 fires in the Amazon. And as of today, there were 9,400 just this year alone. It's an 84% increase on the same period in 2018. That means our planet's ability to clean itself, our lungs, are being literally destroyed. And they won't be there. And it takes a very long time to create a forest like the Amazon, or say the boreal forest in northern Canada. So that's one environmental issue that's really big. The other is the heat waves. I don't know about you, but as I've been growing a little bit older, I've been having more trouble with the heat. I always did. I grew up in Eastern Oregon, and heat could make me dizzy, but I ran from shade to shade. I was a kid, you know, I played in the sun, and I still like to be around the sun and be in it. But, you know, if it gets up at 90 and there's smoke in the air, I can't walk around anymore, which is a really strange sensation to experience. So, but the heat waves are a lot more serious than me being uncomfortable. The heat waves are killing people throughout the whole world. And I recently saw a report that says that heat waves are the number one killer of natural disasters, of those kinds of disasters, including hurricanes, etc. So heat waves aren't just something that affect people who don't like heat. They kill. So that's another topic we can talk about. I do believe we already have two people on the line. Edie, welcome to KBLO this morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I want to alert all your listeners today. There's going to be a fun nonviolent action hosted by the Extinction Rebellion Portland Forest Defense Affinity Group. It's going to be at 12 noon between the Federal Building and Terry Schwank Plaza.
So that's on 3rd, yeah.
Southwest 3rd between Jefferson and Madison. The reason why we're there is because of very urgent, important issues that we need to act on right away. The National Environmental Policy Act that requires public comment is being gutted, and the last day in which we can have any comment on whether or not we're ever going to have any public input into public policy is Monday, the 26th. So we need to get information into them ASAP. The local U.S. Forest Service
is there
not including...
Edie, is there a phone number or a website you could give us to be able to go to this and take action on it?
Yes. If you look at the Extinction Rebellion PDX, you will see information about the Facebook page, and then that will also have a link for the online public commentary. But also the local U.S. Forest Service is excluding the public and science scientists' information from being included in their climate plan. And we are having about a 12,000-acre timber sale on Mount Hood, the dry side, crystal clear timber sale, which includes about 3,000 to 4,000 acres of old growth, mature growth, in an area where we have a new wolf pack, and it would be destroying the water and the treaties for the Warm Springs Consolidated Tribe.
This is a crystal. Say it again, though.
It's crystal clear. They call it a restorative project, but it is a timber sale.
And
the whole purpose is to.
How can people comment on this or take action on the timber sale?
We want to come to the rally, 12 noon today, and the Facebook page. We will have, and also Bark out, Bark that defends the Mount Hood Forest, also has a website. We'll have information. We will also be handing out information about a climate defense action camp that was going to be hosted by the Forest for Climate Resilience, September 4th through 9th. There'll be also actions that people can be doing in the woods, as well as at local offices. And BARC has their annual base camp where people learn about Mount Hood National Forest, the timber sales, and then they ground truth. They walk the land, taking photographs, documenting things to see whether or not the timber companies are telling the truth, the Forest Service is telling the truth, and how to document endangered species. For example,
let's stay with that part for right now. I want to just make sure that everybody's hearing all of the facts. So it's Extinction Rebellion PDX on Facebook. You can get more information there. But it's 12 noon today. There is an action sponsored by them, and I believe BARC will be there, as you just said. And it's going to be at the federal. It'll going to be on Southwest 3rd.
1220 Southwest 3rd. I also want to let people know that they're gutting the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Endangered Species Act. And Governor and Kate Brown and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife have removed wolves from endangered species. And we have some wolf packs that have reinstated in the Mount Hood Forest that are highly vulnerable, and we are already having people who are using forest lands to do free grazing that is destructive. We also need to stop the inclusion of more and building of more roads.
So okay. Edie, I'm going to ask you to stop right there because it's so much that we want to be able to at least catch the most important ones of them. I do appreciate what you're bringing up. I want to encourage people that if you're interested in these issues at all, go down to the federal building at noon today if you can, or actually near the federal building. You'll see the people who are there protesting. And also, I wanted to make sure that I stated about the wolves. I believe they just killed three more from a pack in the Pacific Northwest. So because there had been confirmed livestock killings, and I think that's never necessary as a way to handle livestock killings, but that's
well,
the news.
There's a cattle runner on public lands that keeps putting the salt blocks right over a den. Running dogs.
Yeah, I believe they're setting the wolves up. And I believe in really trying to work to protect the wolves. I'm with you on that, Edie, and I'm with you on your other issues. So I encourage people to check out Extinction Rebellion PDX on the web and see if that's not some place where you want to put your activism. I believe we have another caller on the line. Camillo, hi. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Thank you for beginning this program on the environment, and I'm really happy to hear what Edie had to say. Not happy exactly.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. The action
that it's been announced. But I just want to add one significant thing, and that is the concept of deep adaptation. if people don't understand what the term is, it comes from an article that was written by Jem, J-E-M, Bendel, B-E-N-D-E-L-L. And if you follow up by reading that, you will learn that the claim that we have time, that there's a window of opportunity to really do something significant about climate change is really not true. There are many scientists who recognize the fact that we don't have the time, and that what we need to do in the time until a catastrophe occurs is prepare ourselves for the consequences, which are ecological and social collapse. I think that people don't want to hear about that because it's discouraging, it leads to despair. But we really need to be honest with ourselves to experience the despair and the grief and move on from that and transform it into commitment to do everything we can to heal the land to the extent that we're able. We don't know how long it will take, but we know that it's inevitable. But the more that we do, the more time that we have to do climate justice. I believe that is really our main task.
Camillo, I also believe in taking personal action within your personal life. Some people, activists say, you know, you can't make a difference at all when you're just, you know, doing your recycling or conserving how much energy you use, thinking about, should I actually make that a car drive, or can I walk there, or can I take a bus down there? Should I fly for a vacation, or can I do something that uses less carbon? All of those kinds of questions are things I think we have to ask ourselves, and not because each one of us all alone is going to solve the whole solution, or each one taking individual action will solve it, but because we're all going to have to take individual actions, and we need to begin to learn how to limit what we our reliance on these things, so that we as people can, you know, not feel it such a shock that we don't have any way going forward when something catastrophic happens in our way. I do really appreciate you talking about this, Camilla. I think it's going to be a real battle, because obviously those who want to deny climate change and the catastrophes going forward don't want to make any of the changes. They want to encourage us to use as much carbon as we possibly can, because they make a, you know, they make a profit off of every little bit we use. So thank you so much for calling, Camilo. I'm going to put that number out there again. This morning is your turn to be on the airwaves. It's 503-231-8187. At some point, I want to get around to talking about Greenland, Trump trying to buy it, and it's melting, both of those topics. But we have George on the line now. Good morning, George.
Good morning. Thank you for covering this. Very, very, it's beyond just very important. It's crucial to the survival of society as we know it. And a few years ago, I bought a book, and I've just begun to read it by the Canadian writer Naomi Klein, and the title is This Changes Everything. And as I got to the title page, I happened to notice there was a subtitle, and the subtitle is Capitalism Versus the Climate. And I thought, now that's an interesting thing to say, because I rarely hear anything said about capitalism on KBOO, but I know that practically everyone who has a program on KBOO is quite aware and
would consider themselves anti-capitalist or anti-imperialist as well. Certainly a lot of people who are around KBOO have that feeling, that experience, you know, that's where they stand.
Yeah, and I just wish there would be some mention now and then that all of these extremely important issues, such as the one you've been talking about in your program, are, we must address them, we must be there if we can to try to move the, I guess, the dynamics of social change. But it's very important that people be aware that as long as the planet and our country are dominated by the economy of capital, which has always said, basically, privately, but I would say in a dominant voice, which we begin to recognize is, the important thing is to have an economy where the profits go to capital, and capital does what it needs to get more profits. And what we need now is an economy where there are at least two major priorities. One of them is for the biosphere of our planet, we have got to take what capital there is and do everything we can to heal and nurture the biosphere. And the other one is, I think, that if we don't take a major part of capital and try at the same time to build social justice for all animals and especially people, I guess some people would say people included.
Yeah, I would. We're all animals.
And that's what I just had to say. If we can just get the issue of the kind of powerful economy that dominates behind the scenes and does these horrifying damages such as the one to the Amazon, that's part of, I think, where we need to emphasize now and then that the economy is so powerful that these issues get turned into a way of making profits.
And always. You know, I was reading, just interrupt you for a second, I was reading a man named Andy Worthington. He wrote the Guantanamo Files, but he also covers other issues on his website in London. Mm-hmm. And in Britain, and he was talking about Extinction Rebellion's incredible summer of activities in Britain and how it is really waking up lots of people, these huge demonstrations they've had. And one of the things that, one of the battles that activists have been facing in London is they're trying to tear down the old projects, low-income housing, that have been there for bunches of years. And they say that it's, you know, to build better, safer, you know, commit, not do crime. But the truth is, and he does a good job in one of his articles, that's andyworthington.co.uk, pointing out the actual expenses of tearing down those and to the planet, by far destroying those housing things is way more costly in carbon. But it's profit making to do it, to conserve them and rehab them where necessary, upgrade them where necessary, is far less energy using and far less destruction of carbon that's already been used in the materials that are there. All this carbon that went into producing them and building and putting it together, all of that then goes reverse direction, getting destroyed and going back into the environment in forms that are not easy to absorb, like, you know, things from concrete and, you know, all the fibers and stuff we make things of. You know, in this city, I know that rebuilding likes to point out and likes, I think we even have rules now when people are building new houses or when they go in and tear down houses. At least I see signs put up. We are required to tear this down in the best way for the environment and to recycle all materials we can, something like that. Mm-hmm. They say, and so, you know, it's every small thing and every large thing where profit wants to get in, and I believe that it is capitalism, the bent of capitalism, but I also believe no matter what you call the society, where the rich rule, we will have damage to the environment because almost all of the methods they have for making money are harmful to the environment.
Thank you for saying those things. I'm glad to hear them, and I'll get off the air because I want to listen to the rest of the program. And would you mind repeating, too, the cited an author, Jim Bendel or something? And once again, you could say that, and so I can.
Okay, Jim Bendel. Yeah, the one I'm talking about, I'll tell you right now, is Andy, A-N-D-Y, Worthington.
Okay, I will write it down.
And his website is andyworthington.co.uk.
Okay, thank you so
much.
Yeah,
he's a wealth of information about Guantanamo, the CIA, and all that stuff too. He's done the most research and has the most validated index of who actually went into Guantanamo, what happened to them, and where they are now. Something that nobody else has really done besides him. Thank you for calling in and giving me an opportunity to talk about those things, and also you mentioning the Naomi Klein book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate. I'm not always on the same page with Naomi Klein politically, but I certainly appreciate and really think her work has been important. So thank you for bringing it up as well.
Thank you. Goodbye now. Thanks again.
You're welcome. We are, this is KBOO Portland. You're listening to, this is Voices from the Edge, More Talk Radio. And on Thursday morning, I'm here. as you all know, many of you do anyway, Joanne Hardesty, who is now our city commissioner, is still a host of this show, but she can't do it every time. So we have been having guest hosts. I'm happy to be doing that. Today, what I'd like to do, continue to do, is have you call in and tell us about the issues in the news or that you've heard of in other ways that really stood out to you and that you wanted to, you've just wanted an opportunity to talk about or to tell someone your point of view about how this developed and why this story is important. So once again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. I want you to bring up the issue that is most important to you that's going on in the world today and tell us what you think about it. I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit more about Greenland until we get another caller on the line. Once again, that number is 503-231-8187. You don't have to talk about the environment. You could talk about, the brawl that happened in Portland this last weekend, but didn't turn into too much of a brawl. What do you think about how that all siphoned out and what happened to it? Or maybe the issue around the neighborhood associations. Are they a form of democracy for the people of Portland to be able to make their voice heard? Or are they a not-in-my-backyard, exclusive kind of grouping that is not serving the neighborhoods? Those are issues locally that I think are pretty important. But let's talk about Greenland. So I couldn't believe it when I first heard it. Actually, I'd been a little out of the news for a couple of days because I've been doing other things. And the AM news director or the public affairs director in the morning, Jenna Yokoyama, pointed out to me this story. And I just started laughing. I couldn't believe that. Even now, I couldn't believe that he would be so ignorant that he thought he could just buy another country. I don't think he even knew it was an autonomous region. I don't think he knew anything about it except why would Trump want to buy Greenland? I think it's pretty clear because the ice is melting, and as that ice melts, access to carbon resources is what the world is looking at. The world capitalists, the world industrialists, they think there's a lot, and there probably is. They can somehow make it into a lot of more carbon that they can use for fuel so that they can carry on poisoning our environment as we go forward. That's the real reason for wanting to buy Greenland, but it apparently made more clear than ever before to the rest of the world that we have a president who's just plain ignorant. He does not have knowledge of how the world operates, enough so that he got offended because they didn't want to sell us Greenland. I don't know. Sometimes you have to take a little laugh when it comes with Trump. I do believe we have another caller on the line. Harry, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call. Talk about Greenland. I think one reason why Trump was asking Greenland to buy Greenland was because 100 years before, we bought the U.S. Virgin Islands from Denmark.
Oh, I thought it might have been like the Louisiana Purchase or something all the way back to France,
So he, I think that's one of the reasons why he thought, because at that time we kind of bullied them to sell it to us. Those three islands, we only bought it for $25 million.
When was this?
1917.
Yeah. So back there a ways. I don't think he probably knew about those. Maybe he did as just great sales deals. I don't know, because he doesn't seem to have any in-depth understanding of history in the United States. I actually think he probably never even read any history of the United States.
Why I'm calling is to change the subject is a news blackout. The right uses fake news. The left uses news blackout. And a good thing happened a couple weeks ago. When Mueller testified in front of Congress, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watched the majority of it, and then I put it on Channel 12 News, Channel 12 Fox.
Right? Yeah, that's Fox News locally.
And guess what they did? The local news. They didn't mention anything about it for 15 minutes, and then what they said was they showed a clip of Trump saying, "I have been exonerated because of the congressional hearing." They showed another Republican congressman saying, "We can now put this to rest." I says, "Wait a minute. I watched it, and they asked Mueller directly, does this exonerate Trump?" And he said no. And just that's
I thank you for bringing that up, the domination of news by the right wing. And you know, I think they do a fairly clever job here locally with Channel 12 the way they do it, because they're not near as bad as, say, Hannity or some of the speakers on right-wing news that way. They appear, if you're just switching channels, say, at the 10:30 or 11 o'clock time and just checking whatever news comes on your TV and you don't have cable, I don't, then they don't appear at first very different from all the other news channels. But the more you listen, you do realize that they are, and they're very clever about how they you know, kind of run the edge of a story without getting into anything deep. I remember when Trump went to France and he was supposed to go to a particular cemetery and he got in a little fit and decided not to go. And then because of that, European leaders ignored him, and there were pictures all over the web and everywhere of the European leaders not even looking at him while they talked happily together. We didn't see that anywhere else. And on Fox News, when I listened to that, there was nothing of that. It was, he went there and he visited a cemetery and he celebrated with all the rest of them. You know, I think it was the D-Day they were going back to, and, you know, we're always celebrating our end wars that are over. I think they do a pretty clever job of what you're talking about, of not giving us real news, of avoiding real news. But I'll be honest with you, sometimes I feel that OPB does that as well. They take sort of a side issue or a way of going into an issue that does not give you all the facts. I've even heard them one time, they were talking about a couple policemen who ended up not getting tried for shooting young black men. And one of them was Trayvon Martin, and I'm not remembering the other young man's name who got killed, but neither of them had guns on them. And what the OPB said was that the officer felt that he was in threat of his life. Isn't that right? They asked whoever they were speaking to, and they said, yes, they did. And she never said, but the guys never had any guns, did they? So just leaving out that little part leaves out basically the core truth of what happened there. They were unarmed young men shot down other people. And so I think it's right, and I am glad you're bringing it up, because we really do have to pay attention to the language of the news that we're getting, wherever we're getting it from.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate you calling. All right, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. This is Voices from the Edge. We're encouraging you to call in this morning. You are the guest today. Whatever issue you want to bring up, I invite you to do it. Any issue that's been in the news recently. Because, you know, we all have these issues that we care about, and we don't have the opportunity necessarily to talk more broadly about them. Maybe it's something you've been really wanting to say. Do you know this? I run around with a lot of did you knows in my head, and unfortunately sometimes when I give them to people, they're not too happy to hear about all the sad things going on in the world, because that's where my mind tends to go. So I want to invite you to call in with your sad news or your not sad news, and talk about the issues you think are really important for us, all of us, the KBOO public, which is mostly local, but has got a national and international listening as well. Once again, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Before the last caller, we were talking a little bit about Glacier and the melting going on, and it's actually pretty scary what's happening there. Let me see if I can throw some facts at you about this. Well, one of the simple things they say is by the year 2100, melting from just Greenland, not glaciers all over the rest of the world, would cause a 3 to 4 feet level of sea rise. And I do remember we heard about one of the Alaska glaciers, this was last week or the week before, and that we discovered that it's melting 100 times faster. Let me say that again. 100 times faster than we projected. There are so many parts of the environment being impacted at a much more rapid rate than we were told, and Greenland is definitely one of them. It was 52 degrees this summer there. That means it's melting the ice. That means every day huge amounts of ice are turning into water, and it takes, you know, tens of thousands of years for those glaciers to rebuild. It's not something that can happen at all. This year, more than 58 billion tons melted from the surface. That was just in 1 month, from July 31st to August 3rd. That's over 40 billion tons more than the average for this time of year. I know those are crazy numbers. What's that mean, a billion tons of ice? Well, what it means is that cities like Miami and our little towns along the coast and all the way up and down around the Gulf, if we're talking, you know, areas that we think of as the United States, they're going to be inundated, and that's going to go a long ways. And everybody is going to have to be moving out of those coastal areas where, you know, the disconnect with what's happening is there's this global climate change going so rapidly, and yet at the same time, we're building, you know, things over there that we shouldn't be. So I want to let you get back on the line now. Anything you want to talk about? I do believe we have a caller on the line. Hi, good morning, Dennis.
Hello. Yes, you, a while back you were talking about the fires in the Amazon.
Yeah.
I'd like to point out that a lot of the destruction in the Amazon now is being caused by their government. The government of the, forgot his name.
Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro,
yeah,
yes.
And he's the one who is doing a lot to clear that land, which is really awful. And I just wanted to mention that that was in the news a while back. But
yes.
It hasn't been mentioned enough, really.
I think that's right. And he just came into power. This is the same Bolsonaro who is, you know, doing all sorts of right-wing things in general. And yes, he is under... he is under fire for this in Brazil. This is also the same Bolsonaro's, administration is the same one that's been proven to be so corrupt by, Glenn Greenwald, who lives there, the famous journalist, and he's recently put out some papers that prove the corruptness of the courts in Brazil. So, yeah, thank you for calling in and mentioning that. It does come from the top of the government. And once again, we were talking about capitalism. How does capitalism relate to global climate change? I think it's pretty clear that capitalism thrives on us burning carbon, and that's not good for global climate change. We do have another caller on the line, I believe. Chris, good morning.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
I just want to interject one thing that I don't think gets talked about enough in relation to climate change.
Yeah.
And that's climate geoengineering or solar radiation management, these programs that are going on to, you know, cool the planet, reflect some of the solar radiation back into the atmosphere, things that are happening, and people don't seem to be talking about it in relation to climate change.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say about that?
I'm very concerned about geoengineering and the methods that our scientists come up with to combat global climate change. I remember talking, I did an interview with Vandana Shiva. I don't know if you know who she is, but she's a very famous environmentalist from India, and she's most famous for her work with seed retention, with going back to earlier seeds, and she's been working with crops that can stand greater salinity and longer periods of heat. I haven't heard how she's doing in the most recent heat waves and how that's affecting the agriculture in her area, because India and Pakistan have had the highest temperatures for the most prolonged period of anywhere else in the continent, right? I mean, in the world right now. But yeah, she's very much opposed to him because, as she said, every intervention we've tried to make on the planet that we claim is good for it has actually only caused more harm. And I tend to believe her. You know, we are so much more complex. The planet is, but even if you look at us, like, let's go down to the tiny animal level. Individually, we're only now finding out so many other things about how our body operates. Well, the planet is much larger and much more complex, and the threat of what harm could be done is what I worry about with the geoengineering, where they can put in billions of dollars to try to change the planet's climate. Right. What do you think about it?
The point I wanted to make is that these programs are active and ongoing, and that they are putting things into the atmosphere, particulates, to cool down the planet ostensibly, and that does have fallout, and these things are going on, and they do have an effect on the environment.
Can you give us any sources to help people dig into this off air?
Go to geoengineeringwatch.org or .com, actually. Check out Dane Wigington. He has podcasts he does every week, radio shows.
Say his name again.
Dane Wigington. And the site is geoengineeringwatch.com.
Great, thank you. Yeah, that makes it easier for people to be able to follow up and dig into that a little bit themselves. I really appreciate you bringing it up. I know there are projects ongoing, and we're just blind to them because there isn't much shining a light on them. So thanks for giving us a source to be able to look at that.
No problem. Just look up in the sky.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Thank you very much for calling.
No problem.
I believe we have another caller on the line. Michael, thank you for calling. Good morning.
Thank you for being there.
You're welcome.
I was downtown last Saturday and just got a lot of information about the whole struggle between Portland's being assaulted, I would say, by intimidating outside forces. And afterward, reading that they thought, the supremacists thought, they'd had a great victory because Portland had to spend $2 million on policing the thing. By the way, the police did a great job, I thought. And they're going to keep coming back because you're going to break the mayor's budget. And it occurred to me, the thought, what I wonder about, the question, I guess, is, could the city sue these outside groups that are coming in for the cost of protecting our own people? What do you think?
Well, I think it's a really interesting question, you know, and part of my only problem would be is, then would that be used on us? And how far would that go from having to start paying fees to be able to get permits to be able to do protests? Because just in case you were one of those that caused damage, because if you can recall, until this last March, this last conflict, the city had been pretty much going after the anti-fascists. I'm one of them. I wear a sign down there that says anti-fascist. I don't wear black block because that's not my thing, but I do wear a sign when I go down there that says anti-fascist. They've been, you know, so this time I agree with you. They did a far better job. And I came over the bridge when the right wingers were crossing the bridge, and the police were definitely not just, you know, patting them on the back. They were standing there as guards like they do against us, the other demonstrators. And so I was like, well, at least they're starting to treat them a little the same. I appreciate that. They weren't being brutal to them. I don't mean that. But I mean, at least they were acting like, we're going to watch you and we're not going to trust you. So I do think it was interesting did they do that. But when you, let's see, I would like us to be able to sue them. I know that Cider Riot, where the right wing went on May Day after they were unable to pick a fight, unable to get other forces to fight with them along the May Day route, they went to Cider Riot where they knew that some people were going to be celebrating, and they started to assault people, and they really did. And so I am all for suing them, and Cider Riot is suing them, and there is a, I'm not going to remember the name of the legal organization that's working with them, but I'm sure you could go to Cider Riot on Facebook and find out. And they're working specifically to use the law to stop these right-wingers. I just worry about if they had to pay a fee in advance. You know, I just worry about how that could be turned by the government to shrink other people's civil liberties and ability to be out there on the streets and have their voices heard.
Wouldn't you say there's a difference between a group that would come in here promising to be doing peaceful, nonviolent action versus a group that's coming in here in advance threatening violence?
I absolutely think there's a difference between those two, but I haven't seen, like I said, until right now, that the police have recognized what that difference is. They've pretended that the people opposing the right wingers were the violence. And I don't mean that there wasn't some fighting between Antifa and you know, Joy Gibson and that. But what I mean is the overwhelming majority of the people opposed to the fascists coming to town have been peaceful at demonstrations, and they've gotten, you know, flashbang grenades, you know, in their helmets and, you know, all sorts of violent police response. So I'm just not trusting that the police will continue to not target the leftists and allow the right wing off the hook. I was impressed. One thing I will say is that they're, according to the, I believe, let me see which newspaper I'm holding here. I'm holding the Willamette Week, the current issue. And in there's an article called The Brawl That Wasn't. And they said that Portland police arrested a half dozen of the most recognizable figures in the local far-right movement, including Joy Gibson. I very much wish they would have said the names there, because these guys are actually famous in their own way, and for us to know who they arrested would be useful. But those names of who they arrested other than Joy Gibson are not in here. But if indeed they did arrest, and supposedly the arrests are related to that May 1st assault on Cider Riot, since the police stood off, you know, like 8 blocks away during the attack and didn't come until it was over, I didn't know if they would ever bring legal action against the perpetrators of the crime, but they have, and I like that. I'm happy about that as well. And it did, I think, have an effect on the right wing. You know, they also say, oh, we're going to be back, we're happy, but it wasn't a very successful rally, really, for them. They can claim that they just want us to spend a bunch of money, but that's not what they said before, and that's not what they got people to, you know, how much money did people have to spend to come from other parts of the nation for something that meant marching up and down the Esplanade on the east side?
So we've got people coming in here trying to pick confrontations with the small sliver of the Antifa or whatever group it might be that is feeling like they're covering where the police maybe have not been. Hopefully the police have turned the corner. But again, my point is, when people are coming in a threatening manner, it seems to me that
we ought to have some legal recourse.
They should be liable for the cost. It's not the same as like the valve turners shutting down the flow of gas into the country from Canada. I mean, there was no threat. There was no damage to any people. There's no damage to any property. And yet they got challenged in court for basically all the money that any of them had. But pretty much all of them got exonerated as it went through the court systems.
Yeah, and that's a very important case, because I think civil disobedience is only going to grow. Extinction Rebellion is going to grow, and that's going to mean more direct action.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate your call. Anybody else who wants to talk about this issue, please do call in as well and weigh in. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We've been talking about a lot of different issues in the news. One of the other issues that I thought I'd bring up, if we have a moment, do we have any other callers on the line? We do. I'll let you guys on anyway. I will just give you the headline of what I think is another part of what we might want to talk about, and that's the invisible crisis of water quality and how it threatens human and environmental well-being. It's a World Bank a report on what's happening around the world. So that our water is not just being used up at rates faster than, faster than what we need. People are having to move out of whole areas of India because there's no water left. Millions of people are having to move. So this is an important issue and something we could talk about as well, but I'm going to go to the next caller.
Hello?
I'm sorry. Hello. Is it Harvey?
Yes, Harvey.
Okay. Good morning, Harvey.
Hi, Linda. Well, as you know, our scientists have stated that much of the current heating of our planet is due to the excessive amount of greenhouse gases that we humans are releasing into the atmosphere with the unchecked burning of fossil fuels like coal, oil, and methane. But it turns out there's another unrecognized source of greenhouse gases. And researchers from the University of Hawaii have found that several powerful greenhouse gases are emitted as common plastics degrade into the environment when exposed to sunlight. So with plastics found around the globe, in our atmosphere, in our oceans, lakes, rivers, as well as on our planet's surface, like the polar caps, mountaintops, city streets, and overflowing landfills, it really is time to take action of this hidden source of deadly greenhouse gases by taking personal action by limiting our use of single-use disposable plastic products and returning to renewable like hemp. You know, hemp makes they can make the best paper. It's more recyclable. It produces 4 crops per season. We don't have to cut down the forest for our packaging, for paper, for cardboard, like, you know, all the Amazon boxes, that billions of boxes that they make out of cardboard. We can do this and get away from the plastic, because plastic, it turns out, is a major unrecognized source of greenhouse gases.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I think it is. I had not heard about it, the release of gases as it breaks down. But what I had heard about is that in microscopic particulate, it rains down on us. I knew about all the goo in the oceans. I knew about all the that, but I didn't think it through to think, oh yeah, it's turned into such small molecules that it rains down on us and we breathe it in. And I started thinking, like, you know, with all the kind of pollutants I have inside my lungs, some of them self-administered and others of them administered by the environment I'm in, what does that plastic do in there inside our lungs as well? And will we have names for the illnesses?
I can tell you, it turns out that I'm calling from Berkeley, California, and here in California we have Proposition 65 that states that the use of petroleum and their byproducts gives us cancer and birth defects. So as we drink the water, and there's plastic in the water, microplastic, breathe the air, eat the food, we are essentially taking all these deadly toxins into our body. And again, we don't have single-payer health care, so the plastic industry and the fossil fuel industry are the poster children for privatizing the profit and socializing losses. We pay for the cost of all this, and they run with the profit. So it's really a deadly situation.
Well, and you know, I'm going to suggest that people do what I've been doing. I've been going to a newer coffee shop that opened up. It's the one that's on Division and 20th. It's called Seven Corners there because all those, by Lad's Edition and Division and all those different streets come together there. But the little coffee shop there in the new building on that corner, they do really interesting things, like to encourage you to bring your own cup. They give you free coffee on certain mornings if you bring your own cup in. And if you don't happen to bring your own cup, they put some ceramic cups outside that you can just bring in and use for free coffee, because they want to encourage you not to do to do only reusable, not disposable things. They also don't give out straws unless you're there in the, you're going to have your straw, you know, have your coffee there in the shop, because straws are a huge source of pollution, plastic pollution. And so they have ones you can use there that can be, you know, cleaned and sanitized, but they also have little $1 ones you can buy. And since I reuse all my plastics that I get, I have straws at home that I bring. But I thought, you know, at first you can feel like, oh, this is just silly. Portlandia ought to be here. The TV show mocking us for being so careful about everything. You know, we have to be, quote, so correct. But, you know, it really isn't a matter of that. Every little bit of plastics they don't use, that's a help to the environment. Every little plastic we don't use, that's a help to the environment. And I really appreciate businesses taking that on. And I'm not trying to tell you go use that particular business. But, you know, if you have a local coffee shop that isn't doing that, encourage them to do it differently. I know one of our underwriters who does sponsor and gives us coffee here. They've moved. It's a local one right here. I can say their name. They're an underwriter of us. That's Grendel's. I know they've moved to having cups that don't require a straw for your iced drinks. There's all sorts of ways we can adapt, and I really appreciate him bringing in the danger of plastics and the different ways we can deal with them. I think one of our biggest difficulties will be sterilized equipment in hospitals. If you've been in a hospital recently, there's more plastic in hospitals than you could dream of. So that'll be another area. Do we have another caller on the line? We do. Mike.
Hello.
Welcome. Yeah. Hi.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you. Along the lines of unrecognized areas for climate change.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. My name's Jack.
I think we lost one caller.
Okay,
so thank you, Jack. We'll go ahead and listen to you and our other caller. Please call back. You do still have a few minutes. Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, well, I keep encouraging my left liberal progressive friends that the focus on carbon dioxide is really distracting. What's going to kill you within a decade is the industrial agricultural
Can you hold still while you're talking to us? We're hearing a lot of screen doors and other things.
Yeah, right. I had to let my wife in from the backyard.
Well, that's a nice thing to do. I do appreciate you being a good husband.
Yeah, no, it's the industrial agricultural toxic pollution that's going to kill you in a decade. And that's the big extinction threat, way bigger than greenhouse gases. So
are you talking about
this?
Yeah, I was reading about sulfates coming from agricultural runoff from the nitrogen somehow, and that they cause, you know, all sorts of mental delays. They're like lead for the brain of children. They have a direct impact on the ability of the brain to grow to its, you know, normal size and to be able to have all the functions that that human being's potential had. It's directly involved in that. And it comes through our water. It comes through all the runoff from agricultural things. And, you know, every time we hear about these algae blooms, people, I want you to think, they say, oh, the warm water and da-da-da call algae blooms. And they say, and the nutrients in the water. Those nutrients are not there naturally in the water. They are there because of agricultural runoff. So there is another thing we have to do. We have to support the farmers and the ranchers who do ecologically healthy practices on the land and not support those who do things that end up killing us all.
Yeah, the hard thing is that you don't know. It's really hard to know what's what.
Yes, it is. It's hard to sort out, and they try to make it harder for us to sort out, don't they?
Yeah, so I would, you know, that's I think the most important thing. And you know, when it comes to the warming climate, there's two things you have to consider. They're talking about the Anthropocene, where we're breaking the cycles of glaciation. You've heard about that, right?
Well, we are causing greater species demise than any other force that's acting on the planet at this time, and so we've changed.
Yeah,
to the
and that's and I believe that's mostly the pollution that we were talking about, yeah. And pesticides, herbicides, and all that stuff too. But when it comes to breaking the cycles of glaciation, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you mean the how long it takes to build up a glacier, and then how fast?
No, the glaciers actually build up pretty quickly once all the forces are in place. They do build up pretty quickly, but I'm talking about the 100,000 and 10,000 year cycles. We're in a roughly 10,000 year warm interglacial. Okay, when the glaciation cycle comes back, it'll be 100,000 years of a mile of ice on your head.
Oh, right. Okay, that does not sound too good.
What would you rather have?
Yeah.
What would you rather have, the tropics in Oregon or a mile of ice on your head?
Well, I can handle the warmth a little bit better than the freezing, I'm not sure. Thank you so much for bringing this up. We do have Mike back on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and let you go and get to Mike.
Yes, hi. And picking up on that call, I agree completely. Industrial agriculture is what this is truly all about, planet destruction. And the way we extract from animals is unbelievable. If we don't, all of us, don't start acting more ethically towards animals and our planet, the numbers about glacier destruction, everything, that's a given. You know, we shouldn't be shocked by that. We're causing that. I want to give a brief example. I live in Eugene, and the Eugene Emeralds baseball team has meat everywhere. When you can smell it from a mile away when you enter the stadium, and when you come in, everything is sizzling all over the place. There's one veggie hot dog alternative, which is horrible, and it's 4.5 times the price of meat on Sundays. You see on the outfield, on the fence, tons of ads for meat. You see it on the scoreboard. They have an in-between innings thing called Meat in Your Seat, where they throw hot dogs for free out into the crowd.
Oh, my goodness.
They have a Carl's Jr. Build-A-Burger promo in between innings. And you look at the crowd, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people are just begging for these hot dogs being thrown into the stands. And if this isn't barbarism, I don't know what is. And it certainly reminds me
of that. I mean, what are they going to do? Put the barfararians, you know, where they used to have, you know, people would eat so much that they had to go over and barf so they could go back and eat more.
It's the propaganda effect.
Yeah.
And people are walking around with chronic diabetes and obesity in those stands, and what it's doing to the planet, it's like, you know, why should we be shocked? The climate change is happening. This is the way we treat animals. And, you know, why is this not talked about more on KBOO? This is a given that if we treat animals this disrespectfully, we're going to foul our whole planet.
I agree That's with you, so and obvious. I do believe we have had
changed so much.
Well, we have had some shows that have focused on that. I think one has animals in the title right now, and I'm not thinking of it. We also had Recovery Zone, but I agree. It's a terrifically important, both from do you farm animals to eat them? Is that ethical? And then to the environmental impact. Well, thank you very much for calling. I'm going to have to let you go right now. We're out of time. I can't go into the next show's time. Not fair to them. I want to thank all of you who called in today. I really appreciate it. You make such a difference with your voices. You really do. Everybody who got to hear you today got to hear what you felt was important and what I felt was important. That's the lucky part of me getting to be on it for me. So thanks very much for being part of the larger KBOO community. There is a KBOO board meeting coming up on August 26th at 6 p.m. at the KBOO radio station. I invite all of you who love KBOO to come, hear about what's going on, and make your own voices heard. That's this next Monday, August 26th at 6 p.m. right here at KBOO Studios. And thank you to John Shuck, our engineer, who's been fielding all of those calls for us this morning. And now back to John. He'll tell us what's next.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell looks at the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Jake Vermas speaks with Michelle Peñalosa about her collection of poems, former possessions of the Spanish Empire. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. S.W. Konzer speaks with Gary and Ann Lundgren of Ashland, who've produced an independent feature entitled Phoenix, Oregon, a comedic look at midlife struggles in the rural Northwest.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Feet to the Fire campaign and protest Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion, on Saturday, August 24th at 2 p.m. at the Central Library in Portland. The movie will be followed by a panel discussion about the Black diaspora. Again, that's Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion,